The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of WENG, the Irini Broadcasting, or its advertisers. Good morning and welcome into this portion of the Morning Magazine. I'm Ken Birdsong. Thanks for being with us this morning. And we're just wrapping up Sleep Awareness Month. That was the month of March. Many of us do not get enough quality sleep, and according to the latest survey by Best Life, there are at least 50 sleepless cities across the country. Now, joining me at the WENG microphones is Dr. Todd Swick. He's one of the leading sleep specialists in Texas. For 25 years, he's served as a medical director for several of the fully accredited sleep centers in Houston. He is board certified in both sleep medicine and neurology. He has been involved in national and international research concerning sleep and wake disorders for more than two decades. And, Doctor, would like to welcome you to the WENG microphones this morning.
Well, thank you very, very much, Ken, for that very nice introduction. And I'm very pleased to be talking to you and your audience.
Well, I didn't get much sleep last night. A little bit tired today. Wonder why.
Well, you're not alone.
I thought you might say that.
Well, throughout the United States, voluntary and involuntary sleep loss is the number one reason why people get tired. We have actually lost over an hour and 20 minutes of sleep in looking at very large averages since the advent of the electric light bulb. And that goes back to the late 1800s. And because when we were an agrarian society, we went to sleep when the sun went down and we woke up when the sun went up, and there was very little argument about that. And as the seasons changed, our sleep length changed. During the summer, we had less sleep, and during the winter, we had more sleep. But since the advent of the electric light bulb, but even more specifically since the advent of social media, and starting with television actually in the 1950s and then accelerating tremendously with the advent of smartphones, computers, iPads, etc., we are now spending much more time later on in the night with bright light in our eyes, which is physiologically interfering with our ability to fall asleep easily. And as such, we are losing a tremendous amount of sleep without having any illnesses whatsoever. But the problem is also that there are illnesses like sleep apnea syndrome, men get prostate difficulties where you have increased need to urinate during the night, you have restless leg syndrome, and you have men and women, actually more women than men, who are suffering from insomnia. So all of these conditions are fragmenting our nighttime sleep and having tremendous impact on our cognitive and physical abilities during the day.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned right at the very first that due to the electric light, obviously, we're staying up later. But it seems to me that if we're getting up early and we're staying up later, that when it does come time to sleep, we would be sleeping harder or more.
Well, you can make up what we call a sleep debt only so much. Because if you are pushing your time to go to sleep, what you're really doing is you're affecting your internal biological clock. Our clock is set so that we have about a 24-hour and 10-minute day. And that you can't change. And so it's not a matter of being able to sleep harder when you are tired and sleep loss, because the brain isn't functioning that way. The brain is hoping that you get between 7 and 8 hours of sleep. And if you don't, you can't adapt to it, and you will therefore suffer the consequences.
All right. Now, I've got to ask you this, because this happens to me all the time. Why is it that at 6:30 or 7 o'clock in the evening after I've eaten dinner, I get real sleepy, and then when it's 9:30 or 10 o'clock, I'm wide awake. I'm back ready to do things again. What's the deal?
The deal there is that's how your brain is wired. A lot of people do that, and we have that clock that I mentioned just a moment ago has different settings. It's like, you know, you have automatic timers, right? And you can have an automatic timer that can turn a light on or off different points during the day. Well, the brain's internal circuitry can do the same thing. We know that the greatest degree of sleepiness comes not only at nighttime, but also in the mid-afternoon and early evening. And countries have used that sociologically to create something that we call siesta time. And siesta is not a cultural phenomenon, it's a physiologic phenomenon, because the brain says you need a period of rest at this hour. And that's how your brain is functioned.
I agree with that totally, because I know just about everybody I know around 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon gets a little bit sleepy.
Absolutely. That's how we're wired.
Yeah, you mentioned sleep debt. An interesting term that I haven't heard before. What about catching up on sleep? Can you do that?
You can catch up on it in short periods of time. If you go 24 hours without sleep, then that sleep debt is going to be built back up the next day, because you will sleep longer. But if you are chronically sleep deprived, I mean, shift workers get this very frequently. People who have obstructive sleep apnea, where their sleep is very fragmented, and they may be in bed for 7.5 to 8 hours, but the actual sleep time is only maybe 5.5 to 6 hours. And if that happens every single night, month after month, there is no making up for that sleep debt.
I understand. All right. Now, why do we not sleep at night? What are the reasons? And I've got to ask you this. Do you find that here in America that our sleeping habits are different than other countries?
No, pretty much. The surveys that have been done have really looked at all countries. They've looked at European countries. They've looked at third world countries. The sleep is about the same. But situational factors can impede sleep tremendously. Worry, anxiety, stress are present worldwide. I mean, that's not something indigenous to the United States. And in periods of national or international crises and stress, there is a significant alteration in our sleep patterns. Over a period of time, people can get adapted to it, but it never becomes a normal sleep pattern. But the kinds and reactions that people have to those variables is the same worldwide.
All right. Now, what about you? You mentioned worry. What about, you know, it seems like when you wake up in the middle of the night, you have something on your mind, and it's just, I'm speaking on personal experience, and I assume other people feel and have the same thing. I wake up and I've got something on my mind, and it is really, it's like I can't get it off my mind. It's
very right. Your mind is racing.
Yeah, and then the next morning when I wake up, I can't hardly even remember what it was that was bothering me so much during the night. Why is that?
Typically what happens is that happens after you have experienced a dream episode. And that dream episode may have been a concurrent set of thoughts about your work, your life, personal life, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And the brain just continues on with the dream mentation. And dreams are not in the part of the brain that is subject to long-term memory. So after you get over those thought processes and go back to sleep, it recedes and is no longer in any available memory bank, if you will, the next morning. So it's more difficult for you to recall what it was. Now, if it becomes a recurring dream, well, then it can be built up and put into long-term storage.
Mm-hmm. Now, and this is a little bit off topic, but I'm interested in knowing this. That is, do you think that when you wake up in the morning and you find yourself in a bad mood or a sad mood or a happy mood, can that be caused from a dream or something that happened in your sleep?
Absolutely. The Dreams that we have typically start 90 minutes after we fall asleep. And each dream segment gets longer and longer as the night goes on. So the longest and most complex dreaming that we have occurs right before we wake up in the morning. And that can certainly carry over in terms of mood and thought content into your waking morning activity.
All right. Many Americans rely on caffeine to help them power through the day. And then I know that a lot of people at night, they'll go, no, I don't want any coffee tonight because I've got to sleep. Does that really affect you?
Absolutely. In fact, it affects people even when they swear upside and down that, oh, caffeine never bothers me and I can have a cup of coffee and get into bed and go right to sleep. The issue is not falling asleep, it's staying asleep. Caffeine has multiple properties. It lightens the level of your sleep. It causes an increased amount of something we call arousals, meaning you go from a deeper to a lighter plane of sleep. Caffeine should be avoided within 3 to 4 hours of bedtime. The same with alcohol. Alcohol can do the same thing. Everybody thinks that alcohol is a wonderful sedative, and actually alcohol is the oldest sleeping preparation known to mankind. It's 3 to 4,000 years old. But when alcohol is metabolized by the body and broken down, what happens is that that nice sedative that gave you that calm feeling when you first ingested it, now is turned into a stimulant. So people who drink themselves to sleep wake up 3 to 4 hours later with obviously a splitting headache, probable really intense nightmares, and the last thing they can do is fall back asleep.
And a lot of, I think a lot of people think that you only find caffeine in soda or coffee, and that's not true either, is it?
No, no. Chocolate is very loaded with caffeine. Sometimes caffeine is a ubiquitous chemical. I mean, there are lots of plants that have caffeine in them, and you've got to be very careful, particularly, like I said, chocolate. And some of the exotic fruits have high caffeine content.
Okay. Now, you mentioned here, while we're talking about caffeine and alcohol, you talk about REM and restorative sleep, that's basically how that interferes with your sleep pattern.
That's right. And because we have two types of sleep, and you need both. One is not more important than the other. We have non-REM sleep, which occurs about three-quarters of our nighttime, and we have REM sleep, which is dream sleep, which occupies in normal people around 25% of the night. In order to feel good and to function at your peak, you need both, and you need both in that approximate proportion. Diseases, drugs, alcohol affect the amount and timing of both aspects of sleep. For instance, if you have flu knocks out deep sleep. It also decreases REM sleep, which is one of the reasons why you're so sleepy during the day when you have the flu, not only because of the elaboration of toxins by the virus, but because you've interfered with your sleep the night before. So it's a combination of events.
Yeah. National Sleep Awareness Month was the month of March, and during March we had a time change. Daylight savings time came up. A lot of people are affected by this. I'm not particularly a big fan of daylight savings time, but does that truly have an effect on us and how we sleep when we change times like that?
Absolutely. What we do is we lose an hour of sleep. So the following night, it's more difficult to fall asleep because it's as if your normal bedtime is at 11, and now you're told your bedtime is at 10, and your brain is not accustomed to it, you're going to lie in bed from 10 to 11 without sleeping. And then, consequently, in the morning, you're going to be getting up an hour earlier, so it's going to be harder to wake up. It has been shown that there are a much increased risk of heart attacks on the days following the time change.
I want to get to that when we get back from the break, if you'll stay with us. Here on the Morning Magazine, we've got to take the final break of the hour, and we'll be back. We're visiting with Dr. Todd Swick. Stay with us.
with Dennis Miller.
Want to talk about lunch spots? I love a good dinner restaurant, white tablecloth, wine, the whole deal, but a lunch restaurant is different, simpler, purer. You want speed, you want affordability, deliciousness, and portions that don't knock you into a coma for the rest of the day. For me, the ideal is the Santa Barbara Chicken Ranch in Santa Barbara. It's been around for 20 years, and I've been there a million times. No-frills Mexican barbecue chicken place. They've got about three things on the menu, but you're there for the half chicken, which comes off the grill a bright orange color, like the color of a sunset from a J.M.W. Turner painting. Comes on a plate with rice, beans, salsa, foil wrap, tube of corn tortillas that are hotter than the surface of the sun. My mouth watering just thinking about it. So if you're in town, check out the ranch. If you're not in town, if you're in your town, go to your favorite lunch spot tomorrow and leave a little extra tip. They indeed have earned it. And that is The Minute. I'm Dennis Miller.
Backyard's looking great, Rob.
Thanks, man. I was planning on adding a deck, too. Know any good contractors?
Why don't you just ask Home Advisor?
Home what?
HomeAdvisor.com. You just tell them about your project, and they match you with local pros that can do the job.
Nice. Now, how much does it cost?
Oh, Home Advisor's totally free to use. Plus, you can read customer reviews, check pricing, and book appointments for free.
What's the website again?
HomeAdvisor.com. Or just download the free Home Advisor app.
Home Advisor.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
Out on the golf course, there are the obvious hazards. There's the pond, the bunker, the rough, the even rougher.
Yeah, put me down for an eight.
The giant maple. The row of houses out of bounds on the right. The angry flock of geese who surrounded your ball. Even the occasional groundskeeper you had no clue was there. But if you think you found every possible hazard out there, think again. The hazard you missed could actually be a killer. It's a spot on your skin, the one that could be skin cancer. Fact is, if you're a man over 50, you're in a group most likely to develop skin cancer, including melanoma, the kind that kills one person every hour. One in five Americans is likely to develop a form of skin cancer during their lifetime. That's why your best shot is to check for a spot. It's easy. Follow through and check your skin. It could be the save of a lifetime. Go to spotskincancer.org to find out how. A message from the American Academy of Dermatology.
Because we care about our Suncoast, W-E-N-G.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on W-E-N-G. I'm KB, Ken Birdsong. Thanks for being with us this morning. According to the CDC, one in three American adults don't get enough sleep. A lack of sleep puts people at risk for chronic conditions and is associated with increased falls and fractures, decreased productivity during the day, and other issues like depression, hypertension, and neurological diseases. Dr. Todd Swick, one of the leading sleep specialists in Texas for 25 years. He's served as medical director for several of the fully accredited sleep centers in Houston. He's board certified in both sleep medicine and neurology. Joins us at the WENG microphones this morning and talking about the falls and depression and all that. Right before the break, you were mentioning a heart attack. And expand on that a little bit, doctor.
Sure. When somebody has fragmented sleep, meaning that there is the lack of depth of sleep and continuity of sleep, the body reacts by elaborating what we call stress hormones. And the more stress hormones can lead to things like diabetes, high blood pressure, and those in turn can lead to things like stroke and heart attack. And people who experience time change, like we just had last month, there is a small number of people where that's the straw that breaks the camel's back, if you want to use that kind of analogy, where their sleep has been fragmented for years, and now the fact that they've taken an hour of sleep away, that is enough to create a disruption in their stress hormone levels and leads to vascular disease, and as I said, there is a national slight uptick in heart attack in the day or two following the springtime, spring ahead activity. So we know that time changes and how we sleep and the continuity of our sleep affects our overall health, both psychologically and physically.
You know, I've got to tell you that I've had some medical problems in my life, and I've been in front of doctors for some time, and I'm always asked, what's your diet? How's your diet? Are you exercising? Are you getting plenty of exercise? Rarely have I ever been asked anything about my sleep, and it seems to me after talking with you this morning that sleep and your habits of sleeping are pretty important to your overall health.
Well, if you consider that we spend close to a third of our lives sleeping, you would think that a medical professional would want to know what's going on during that third of your life. You're absolutely correct. The average physician who goes through medical school has gotten an hour of instruction on sleep medicine. It is very, very sorely undertaught. Even today in 2018, we don't have schools, in fact, more than half the schools don't have any sleep instruction whatsoever. So it is a failure of the American medical education that doctors are not informed about sleep issues and how to treat them.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I wish I knew. I teach in University of Texas and School of Medicine, and I teach at some very good hospitals, and I give lectures on fundamentals of sleep and then more advanced courses, and they're very well attended because the medical students and residents and fellows say, we never learned that. It's a matter of time. It's a matter of funding. I mean, there are lots of different reasons that are given.
Wow, it's just amazing, like you said, that we spend that much time in our life sleeping, and yet it's one of the things that we talk about very little.
You're absolutely right. In fact, we even have a name for it. Sleep issues are dealt with in something called a doorknob consultation. And by that we mean after the patient has seen their primary care doctor or internist or any specialist for that matter, as the doctor is leaving, his hand is on the doorknob ready to walk out of the exam room, and the patient looks up at him and says, oh, by the way, doc, I'm having trouble sleeping. And there's a reflex that occurs more often than not where the doctor says, okay, here's a prescription for a sleeping pill, and out the door he goes. And that's the wrong way to handle it.
Certainly sounds like it. We have a little less than a minute here. How can people get more information on what we've been discussing this morning, Doctor?
Sure. There are some very good websites out there. The American Academy of Sleep Medicine, which is AASM.org, has some wonderful information for the general public. The National Sleep Foundation, NSF.org, has some excellent information and pieces of literature on how to get good sleep and what good sleep tips are. And I have a website called neurologyandsleep.com that also has some very good points for how people can get good sleep.
Doctor, thank you for being with us this morning. We certainly appreciate it. Have a great day.
Not only have a great day, but sleep well and pleasant dreams.